Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm your host, Tim Shanahan, and this week we're going to get into one of my favorite topics. The title of this is Isn't Independent Reading a Research-Based Practice? I wrote this in response to a letter that I'd received from a teacher a while back. Let me start with that letter today. Dr. Shanahan, I know that you don't support independent reading at school. However, in my graduate program, we're learning that research evidence shows that kids who read the most become the best readers. I don't get why you don't support this research-based practice. And so that was the letter that I got. Now, this is a blast from the past. This letter came in a while ago. The blog entry first posted on June 22nd, 2019, and I've updated it a bit. It is being reissued on September 21st, 2024. Now, the reason I've resurrected this one is because recently, many of my podcasts have been greeted by jeers on social media claiming that pretty much any research-proven approach to reading instruction would be better replaced by opportunities for independent reading in the classroom. I don't know if these criticisms are coming from teachers or just folks who this idea of kids just reading on their own and solving their reading problems is appealing to them. Now, I certainly agree that the more students read, the better readers they're likely to become. But that's not best accomplished by sacrificing instructional time, since instruction does more for reading achievement growth than does independent reading. Teachers and parents should encourage students to make reading a part of their daily lives. Making leisure reading a school subject carries the wrong message to kids, I think. It says that reading is something adults will force you to do when they control your time, rather than encouraging you to find a place for it in your own schedule. So let me jump into what I wrote back to this teacher, and I hope you find it useful. I started out with, in grad school, my statistics professor, the late John Magoon, had us analyze a set of research data that he had collected. These data revealed a close connection between the number of school library books and kids' reading achievement. Makes sense, right? The greater the availability of books, the better students would read. Unfortunately, these data showed the opposite of that. The more books available, the lower were the kids' reading ability. Schools that had bigger school libraries had the lowest achieving students. Now, there's a rousing headline for you: cut school library budgets so kids can learn to read. My point in telling you that, beware of correlations. Your professor describes relationships between how much students read and how well they read, and you assume that one leads to the other. But correlation does not mean causation. Just because two things are correlated doesn't mean that one is actually affecting the other one. Go to the BuzzFeed website and you can see how increases in ice cream consumption lead to murder. Something about which fans of mint chocolate chip or Oreo cookie dough should be concerned about. Now, obviously, that's silly. I eat ice cream all the time, and I've never killed anyone. The reason for that odd correlation results because ice cream sales and murder both happen to be related to a third variable, outdoor temperatures. As weather gets hotter, people eat more frozen custard and get more violent. Those two latter variables have nothing to do with each other, despite their high intercorrelation and the fact that they're both more likely during the summer. In those library book data that I was talking about, the weird connection resulted not because high book availability interferes with learning to read, that's not the case, but because school libraries at that time and in that state were funded on the basis of reading achievement. The poorer a school scored in reading, the more library funding that the state gave it. So, of course, schools that had large numbers of kids who were struggling readers got more books than the other schools did. In other words, poor reading caused library books. Correlations also tell us nothing about the directions of relationship when the variables do have a causal connection. Your professors are correct. There are many correlational studies showing that the best readers read more. That's a fact. But there are several possible interpretations of this correlation. The first one, the one you assumed, is that these data show that if students practice their reading, their achievement will rise. Makes sense, right? You practice something, you get better at it. Second, another possibility, however, is that the better readers choose to read more. Their stronger abilities make reading enjoyable and less of a chore. Poor readers often can't find books that they would enjoy reading. You know, if you're a fourth grader and you read like a second grader, you want to read fourth grade books, but you might not be able to. Third, it's possible that this reading problem is like the ice cream murder connection. Perhaps amount of reading and reading achievement are both related to some third variable, like, well, in this case, parent education. Learning and students' life habits may both be connected to how much their parents read. Fourth, the relationship may be a reciprocal one. Higher reading ability encourages more reading, and more reading rewards the reader with improved reading ability, the so-called Matthew effect. Scientists have long been aware of specious or false correlation and have worked out ways for sorting out this kind of thing. The most obvious fix is to test the patterns experimentally. For example, ice cream producers could provide free ice cream to everyone who lives in certain randomly selected cities for the month of July. They would withhold these goodies from other cities. An experiment I'd be happy to volunteer for. I bet people's weights might increase in the ice cream gifted cities, but the murder rates? Probably not. With a study like that, we could be certain, however. Well, what about reading? We could try to get kids to read more and then measure improvements, if any, in their reading achievement. There have been several such studies, and they have not been terribly successful. The results have ranged from no improvement to extremely modest gains. That's what the National Reading Panel found. That doesn't mean that reading practice can't improve reading achievement, only that the practices evaluated so far haven't done so. Most such studies have looked at sustained silent reading, SSR, or DEAR time, the practice of setting aside class time for kids to read self-selected books on their own. A major flaw in these studies has been a lack of measurement of amount of reading. They impose the practice, but fail to monitor whether kids are really reading more than they did, you know, without having DEAR time or SSR time. One of the best studies of this type found that as kids read more at school during their DEAR time, they chose to read less on their own away from school. These independent reading times at school may be exchanging one kind of reading for another, or may be discouraging students from embracing reading on their own. That's a consideration that a lot of people overlook. One very important point that is usually ignored in these discussions is that these kinds of studies are not really measuring the impact of independent reading on reading achievement, but the impact of specific ways of encouraging kids to read more. Perhaps SSR and DEAR times are duds, but maybe there are some forms of encouragement that could be more successful. I've long thought, for instance, that these approaches isolate kids, which is not very motivating. Teachers and publishers often tell me that they have improved on SSR, for example, by adding reading conferences or by quizzing kids on the books. So I need not be concerned about its limitations. So far, no one has conducted a study showing unambiguously that we can increase kids' amount of reading with clear improvements resulting in achievement. Colleagues have often chided me for not recognizing the importance of practice. It's not practice that I abhor, but the type of practice that is being promoted by SSR and DEAR. Experimental research in other realms suggests that not all practice is equal. Anders Ericsson's work is really important here. Deliberate practice seems to be particularly effective. What does Ericsson mean by deliberate practice? Well, it's practice that's purposeful and systematic. It requires focused attention, and it's conducted with a specific goal of improving performance. Practicing under the auspices of a coach seems to matter too. Deliberate practice, which has been found to be quite effective, sounds less like free reading and more like the reading that teachers guide in a directed or a guided reading lesson. Another way that scientists deal with this kind of correlational evidence is to conduct longitudinal studies in which amount of reading practice and reading achievement are each measured multiple times. Instead of correlating these two things at a single time, we can track the influence of each across development. It's possible, for instance, to connect the amount of reading practice that fourth graders engage in with their gains in reading achievement between fourth and fifth grade. Such studies, however, have failed to show a clear connection between earlier reading practice and reading comprehension gains. For instance, one of these studies concluded, and this is a quote, I'm going to read this, in fact, I'm going to read this one twice, I think. Reading achievement at age 10 significantly predicted independent reading at age 11. The alternative path from independent reading at age 10 to reading achievement at age 11 was not significant. Now, that's the quote. Let me go back to it. Reading achievement at age 10, that's how well the boys and girls could read when they were 10 years old, significantly correlated with, significantly predicted how much independent reading they engaged in at age 11. Kids who read better read more. Okay. The alternative path from independent reading at age 10 to reading achievement at age 11 was not significant. In other words, it didn't seem to matter how much the boys and girls were reading on their own at age 10. That didn't affect how well they learned to read, you know, the amount of improvement they made, say, from age 10 to age 11. Another of these longitudinal correlational studies concluded that, and again a quote, the results show that it is children's reading skills that contribute to their subsequent out-of-school reading habits rather than vice versa. The more competent the children were in sentence comprehension, text reading, word recognition at the end of first grade, the higher the amount of book and magazine reading. This study did find that reading practice was related to later improvements in word recognition, but not enough to affect the kids' reading comprehension. Similarly, with older students, Kane and Oakhill reported that reading practice had positive impacts on vocabulary, but not on comprehension, and that practice was more attributable to attainment than the opposite. Same pattern again. How well you read affects how much you read. How much you read doesn't have much of an impact on how well you read. My conclusions from all of this: increasing students' amount of reading may have positive impacts on at least some aspects of reading, word recognition, fluency, vocabulary. And over a long enough period, perhaps these improvements in foundational skills might enhance reading comprehension, though neither experimental nor longitudinal studies have found such a connection. The practice effects that have been reported are tiny, so if they do eventually lead to better comprehension, that would likely take a long time, several years probably, and those comprehension improvements would probably be even smaller than what we've seen in the studies so far. The more certain effect, according to these longitudinal correlational studies, is that reading achievement influences desire to read. If we're serious about making kids love reading, we'd better do a better job in teaching things like phonemic awareness, phonics, vocabulary, fluency, morphology, sentence comprehension, cohesion, text structure, and so on. Swapping one form of school reading, that is teachers guiding reading, the reading of challenging text, for another form of reading, having kids reading self-selected texts on their own, is not likely to improve either achievement or to build a love of reading. Even efforts to get kids to read more during the summer away from school have not had much impact on achievement, and in those studies, there's no trade-off. The kids aren't getting less instructional reading. The bottom line, independent reading at school is not a research-based practice. Use school time to raise reading achievement and find ways to encourage kids to choose to read on their own away from school. Doug Fisher, my colleague, has had great success in getting inner-city kids to read at home by making texts available, allowing reading choice, providing teacher book talks and opportunities for kids to share socially their home reading at school through things like book clubs. That approach, though not yet proven to work by experimental study, intrigues me because it has the possibility of both increasing amount of student reading while encouraging students to choose to read on their own. Even better, it would be doing this while preserving the maximum amount of teaching. an approach more consistent with research findings that show achievement to have a bigger impact on practice than the opposite. Doug estimates that his students get 15 extra days of teaching each school year from this practice, since 30 minutes of free reading per day across a 180-day school year displaces 15 full days of instruction or deliberate practice. Now, please let me enjoy my ice cream in peace. If you would like a written copy of this, you can go to Shanahan on Literacy. And if you look at the September 21st, 2024 blog entry, Isn't Independent Reading a Research-Based Practice? You can have that written copy. It has, let me just see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 research references there. I have the references, not just the citations, have been included. And there's also a link to the original blog entry. And the reason for that is so that if you're interested, this attracted 20 comments originally when it was posted. I'm sure its reposting will lead to some more, but if you'd like to go back, that link will be there for you. With that, I'd like to thank Greg Johnson, our sound engineer, for making this listenable, and to you for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you up the road a piece.